This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, that was a spirited debate with Julio Rivera about immigration and whether and refugees and whether or not Donald Trump and Mike Pence should be arrested and put in jail for kidnapping and child abuse. We'll no doubt continue that conversation as we go through the program. But right now, Dr. Richard Wolff is with us, our old friend, the economist, the co-founder of Democracy at Work, the author most recently of Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown, his website, democracyatwork.info. You can tweet him at Prof. Wolff, P-R-O-F-W-O-L-F-F. Dr. Wolff, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
It is always great having you with us on the program. Venezuela. I wanted to talk about Venezuela and hyperinflation, and kind of tie it into the discussion of the Green New Deal and how Republicans are saying that that would lead to hyperinflation here in the United States. They're saying, hey, if you want to spend a couple $1 trillion doing something really cool, the government's going to have to print money, and you're going to end up looking just like Venezuela. You're going to have hyperinflation. If you want to have Venezuela, do the Green New Deal. That's what these socialists are trying to bring to you. But my recollection, and please educate me about this, you're the professor of economics. My recollection during the 1970s, when the Arabs cut off our oil supply and we saw inflation, you know, really just go through the roof. It wasn't hyperinflation, but I bought a house with a 13% mortgage. You know, I remember that well. And I think they got as high as 18% at one point. That what we learned, or what I learned then, was that inflation was not caused by the government printing too much money. It was caused by a lack of a commodity that is essential to the country, in this case, oil. And what I understand is going on in Venezuela is the commodity that they are lacking that's essential to that country right now is American dollars. And is that true? And can you explain that? And am I making sense here or way out in left field?
No, you're making perfect sense. You know, there's something absurd in these kinds of arguments. A hyperinflation simply means that prices are going up quickly. And if prices are going up quickly, it's usually a sign of a certain imbalance. Either there's more money chasing after insufficient numbers of goods, or there's not more money, but there's a drop in the availability of goods, so that competing people wanting to get the scarce goods bid up the price, because that's how markets work. If there's more people who want something than there is of that something, the people start bidding against each other, driving up the price. So in the case of Venezuela, they have a set of conditions that produces an excess of money on the one hand and a diminution of goods and services on the other, so you get a very rapid inflation. Other countries have had that, countries that have nothing to do with socialism. It's really not relevant to that. It can happen in a socialist country, but it typically has happened much more often in capitalist countries when those conditions occur. The argument that you can't have a new deal, green or otherwise, because the government will spend money to do it, and therefore we'll have an inflation. I mean, the best way to answer that, since it is stone cold wrong and silly, is to remind people that the Green New Deal is a play on the term New Deal. And in the 1930s, we had a New Deal in which the government spent an enormous amount of money putting 15 million people to work, paying their salaries, creating Social Security, which gave millions more money every month, creating unemployment compensation, none of which had existed before, pumping more money into the economy. Did we have the inflation that these worrywarts want us to think about? No. Prices fell in the 1930s. Not only didn't they go up quickly, they didn't go up at all, they went down. And so the reality was, putting all those people to work produced the goods and services so that the money the government spent was easily used up to buy those things, not only at no rising price, but actually the things were produced in such quantities that the prices went down, even though the government was spending more money. So in order to answer these kinds of questions, you have to stop doing the kind of ideological quackery that you hear about this. The people who are against the Green New Deal don't want the government to be doing the things that they would prefer to make private profit on. The rest of it is a lot of BS to prevent that, to keep their privileges, to keep the very system that produced the inequality you were talking about before we began conversing. Beyond that, economics-wise, it's silly.
Yeah. So when and I see this a lot on television. I see it even on television networks where the hosts appear to be kind of leaning left, like MSNBC and some of the shows on CNN, where AOC is great and Bernie is great, but you know we really can't afford that. And I'm hearing this now from presidential candidates. In fact, several of them have come forward and said, Green New Deal, no, I can't. Medicare for all, we can't afford that. Education for all, we can't afford that. And I keep banging my head against the wall, particularly when I hear like Democratic senators saying this kind of crap. Forgive the word, because my recollection, and again, please fact check me on this, is that during the GI Bill in the 1950s, 60s, and early 70s, for every dollar that we spent educating young men and women who came back from World War II, college educations, we got an additional $7 in government income, that is tax revenue, that we wouldn't have otherwise gotten because they had higher incomes, and so they paid higher tax rates. When Eisenhower borrowed money to build the interstate highway system, it produced way more in tax revenues than it cost us. That these things are actually revenue generators. They don't. And the same thing with having a healthy populace. If everybody had health care and we took the 20% bloodsuckers, the health insurance companies out of the equation, we would save money and we'd have a healthier populace. How can anybody, including a Democrat, make the argument that we can't afford to give everybody college education, that we can't afford to have a national health care system, when in fact, that we can't afford to have a Green New Deal, green new infrastructure, when in fact, every single time in the past that we have done these things or things like these things, they have actually generated more wealth than they have cost?
Well, it's 50 years of endless propaganda to make all of this seem reasonable, sadly, even to middle of the road or even slightly left of center Democrats who have, drunk the Kool-Aid and imagine that this sort of thing is what you have to say and what you have to kind of believe. Here's the silliness with the taxes. You're absolutely right. The top tax rates on really wealthy people were between 70 and 95% for much of the 1950s, 60s and into the 70s. And that's one of the reasons why when your government spent money and put people to work or built the highways or built the interstates and so forth, the money that was generated, the jobs that were generated, pumped a lot of money into the federal government so you didn't have these kinds of problems. So it's bizarre to say we can't afford something at the end of a 40-year period when you have cut taxes on corporations vastly, and you've cut taxes on the richest 10 or 20% of the people enormously. That's the reason we, quote, unquote, can't afford it. Of course we can afford it, just like we once did afford it. But that would require jacking up the tax rates on the rich, and that's the real issue here. They don't want to do that, so they invent these other arguments because they haven't the courage or the honesty to say, honestly, I don't want to pay them any more taxes, and I'm going to do everything I can to prevent it. If I could go back on one more point about Venezuela.
Please.
A nearby country, like Venezuela, a socialist country, Bolivia, run by a leader who calls his country and himself a socialist, a man by the name of Evo Morales, who's roughly the equivalent in Bolivia of what Maduro is in Venezuela. They're both socialist countries. Is there a runaway inflation in Bolivia? Not at all. Are people leaving Bolivia for another country? Not at all. Bolivia had one of the fastest growth rates over the last few years of any country in Latin America. The point is not that socialism is always good or always successful. That would be silly. But it is just as silly to imagine that you can pick a country that is having a lot of difficulties for a whole host of reasons, happens to be socialist, and therefore allows everyone from Mr. Trump on down to carry out one of the dumbest moves any student ever had to be reprimanded for, which is don't make an entire case about a system dependent on one example that you happen to choose. That's not honest you know, that's really a kind of flim-flam economics, not a serious approach to what's going on.
Yeah, well, flim-flam and Trump, I mean, you know, shouldn't surprise us, I suppose.
No.
So what would you say is the biggest lesson of Venezuela? We had Greg Palast on the show last week. He used to report from Venezuela about Venezuela for the BBC, like, you know, a decade ago. And he pointed out that the Maduro government, he sent pictures, right? The cabinet and all the members of Congress of his party, they were all people of color. And then you look at a picture of the guy, Guido, or whatever his name is, the Speaker of the House that Trump wants to be president, and you look at all the members of his party, and there was like 200 of them in this picture. They were all white European ancestry, all of them.
Right.
And
right.
Greg was making the point that the reason that we have singled out Venezuela is twofold. Number one, we want their oil. The same reason we went after Iraq, you know, the old Dick Cheney thing. And number two, right. You've got a government in a majority people of color nation that is a majority persons of color government, and that was intolerable to Trump and the white supremacists. We have a little less than a minute. Your thoughts on those things?
Yeah, I mean, the United States, it's again a little bit like the earlier argument. The United States has tried to get rid of Chavez. That failed, and it went to work for the last 20 years trying to undo that government with trade sanctions, military interventions, freezing their assets, number one. Number two, you have that minority sitting at the top of Venezuelan society, rich, white, etc., that doesn't want to lose its century and a half of special privileges sitting on top of a very poor country. Then you have a revolutionary effort, Chavez and now Maduro, trying to undo that. They have two enemies, the hardcore who controlled industry and banks inside their country, that white ruling class, and the Americans as their allies. That's a hard row to hoe, and a lot of their problems come out of that confrontation.
Brilliant. Brilliant. As always, Dr. Richard Wolff, thank you so much for being with us, Professor.
Thank you, though. Glad to talk with you.
Great talking with you. democracyatwork.info is his website. rdwolff, also with two Fs, .com, and you can tweet him at Prof Wolff, ProfWolff. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Patrick in Seaside, California. Hey, Patrick. Thanks for
Tom,
watching the program
you?
On free speech. What's up?
You mentioned kidnapping and child abuse. I wanted to add a third charge or crime. But before I do, I had two things I wanted to say about Trump. I think the only thing the Bush crime family has on Trump so far is body count. I think it's not outrageous to, if you can include the crimes in Central and South America, Pinochet, Letelier being assassinated on our soil, the death squads, and then two invasions in the Gulf, I think 2 to 3 million dead is not far-fetched to attribute to 41 and 43. That's first
and
of
Reagan.
Why the only thing that he and Reagan, yeah, that's the only thing they have on him so far. My other quick point, and not meant to be taken too flippantly, is I was just thinking, God, you know, Trump really probably does have the potential to be worse than Hitler, because Hitler was a vegetarian who adored his German Shepherd. This guy eats absolute utter crap. I don't know how many drugs he's on to keep him from having a simultaneous stroke, heart attack, and aneurysm, just have his head and chest explode from all the garbage he feeds himself. He eats total crap, and he hates animals. But
yeah.
My main point was, you mentioned
kidnapping. Well, if I may, Patrick, just to that real quickly, because we have a little bit of time here. I don't know if you saw it, but the New York City's health department just came out with a report on the Trump hotels, on the restaurants in the Trump hotels. Rats, cockroaches, they basically failed. So it may be that the reason that Donald Trump only eats fast food is because he knows how bad the food is in his own restaurants.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that. I totally agree.
I totally agree with you. You wanted to talk about separating kids from their parents.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. About kidnapping and child abuse. But what I wanted to know is, since a lot of these kids are being funneled to Betsy DeVos-affiliated, quote-unquote, adoptions and foster homes, Could we add trafficking to that? And could
yes.
you apply RICO Act provisions or the Mann Act? I mean, does this count as trafficking?
Well, the Mann Act applies to transporting underage people, not even underage, transporting people across state lines for the purposes of sex. And,
oh, okay.
And so that's, you know, it's mostly targeted at prostitution.
Although that might apply for some people in this group.
Tragically, yes, tragically, but probably not the vast majority of them. But the you know, yeah, trafficking, yeah. And I mean, we don't know where a lot of these kids are. We may never know because, you know, people just showed up and said, oh, yeah, I'm related to that kid. And the government said, okay, here you go. Or they got moved from facility to facility when facilities like this place in Arizona get shut down for child abuse.
God, did the biblical Egyptians of Exodus even do this kind of crap to the Israelites? They kept families together. They worked them to death, but they kept the families together, didn't they?
As far as I know,
this
I mean,
is such atrocious, heinous. This is not us. This is not America.
No, the closest we've gotten to this in recent history is when Franklin Roosevelt interred the Japanese, and he kept families together. In fact, he kept communities together. And I don't mean that in a super positive way, but by and large, you know, the areas that they had inside those camps reflected the towns that the people came from. And I
don't think that we've seen this level of sociopathy this from Miller and Trump in a long time, or maybe ever.
Of brutality.
It's a whole new level.
I think you have to go back to the Andrew Jackson administration and his war against Native Americans, his genocidal war against Native Americans and the Trail of Tears, to see this level of sociopathic behavior.
Right.
Patrick, thank you for the call. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Lewis in Chicago. Lewis, you don't believe kids were separated? Am I reading this right?
Oh, yeah. It's interesting, the biggest story of the day, the Jesse Smollett case you're ignoring, when it fits in so perfect, his hoax fits in with your hoax. Tell me, what parents are not are getting separated from their kids? These kids, what are they doing on our border? And why is it that you talk about foreign kids more than you talk about ours?
Wait a minute. First of all, you're saying that there's no kids being separated from their parents, and then you're saying, but here they are on our borders. You can't have it both ways, Lewis.
No, you can. They're on our borders. Why are they there? They're not there with their parents.
They're there because our policies, the Reagan policies in the 1980s in Central America,
Obama
destroyed the countries that they came from.
She said, Obama.
And if you don't think that these kids were separated from their parents, then why did John Kelly go on national television and tell us that he was doing this intentionally to inflict emotional pain on these parents and these children to discourage other parents and children from coming to the United States? Did he just make that up?
I tell you what, if we find one kid that is released to someone who is not their parent, we can charge you for sex trafficking. You cannot prove that kid is that
We have already found multiple kids. There have been court cases on this. There, you know, Lewis, I don't get why you don't believe this. It's just astonishing to me.
And
try to bring up Jesse Smollett. I mean, you know, that's a tragedy. This is a sad commentary on how seductive fame is and what people will do to get it. But, you know, that has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that he's black. Apparently, he's black. These kids down there are brown. Is that what's setting you off, Lewis?
Tom?
I just asked you a question.
You cut out. What? Please answer. Ask again.
Sure. Yeah, you wanted to bring up Jesse Smollett and you're ragging on these kids down the border. He's black, they're brown. Is that what's setting you off?
No, I could care less. The thing is
so if we were separating British immigrant kids, it would be okay with you?
If these kids are so interested in coming here with nothing for God knows what reason, why are they coming here?
Lewis, think for a minute. Just for a moment. Just pause and for just a little bit of humanity here. Think about what it would take for you to go to your children in the middle of the night and say, we have to flee. Gather everything you can carry in one suitcase or less. We're never coming back to this, back to, you're in Chicago. We're never coming back to Chicago. We are fleeing our country. What would it take for you to do that, Lewis? Think about what those parents are going through. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's 20, coming up on 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day in just a moment. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Just a quick heads up, by the way, at the top of the next hour, Dr. Douglas Rushkoff is going to be with us. He was with us with his book, Present Shock, some years ago, and this time he's got a new one out. We'll be talking about that on the air. His new book is Team Human. So just a quick heads up. Jesse in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hey, Jesse, thanks for calling. What's up? Thanks for watching us on YouTube.
Hey, Tom, it's a pleasure as always. I'm actually the guy, Jay from Greensboro. I put my real name up there. I wanted to address a caller who was crying about the people at the border.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to go into a rant, a small rant, but kind of a rant because this needs to be said.
Go for it.
I am so sick and tired of these retarded Trump supporters crying about brown people at the border. When there was an article I just saw on NPR, and I'm probably about to post it in the chat, basically, it was a guy who was in the National Guard, 49-year-old lieutenant, white guy. You know what he was planning on doing?
Yeah, he's planning on killing people like me. He was going after liberals in the media and Democratic politicians. He was planning on trying to start a civil war, and it was all about white supremacy.
Basically, exactly. You hit the nail on the head. What he was trying to say was, I'm going to murder as many people as possible, and if I can't get Whitey off the couch, I'm going to kill them because they're traitors to our white genocide.
Yep.
Let me go ahead and just put this out here right now. Humanity is all one species.
Yep.
Pigment is nothing but a chemical in your skin. That's it. That's all it is.
Yep.
And the problem is that when you have these idiot, retarded, stupid, moronic brain-looking Trump supporters call your show talking about trying to have an argument, and you start asking, like you asked him, okay, is this something against brown people? Dude was like, oh, you cut out. You didn't cut out. He didn't want to answer the question because you exposed him. That's the thing. And I think really what's going on, this is what we need to do to these dumb conservatives, is because they always call into the show, talk about they got a point to make, and can't make the point. So what we as liberals and progressives need to do is hold their feet to the fire, have them smolder and cook just to see how it feels. Because the thing is this. Kellyanne Conway's so-called alternative facts, and she's looking like Pennywise, is not a cute thing. They're saying, hey, let's believe in a lie before we believe in the truth.
Yeah, well said. Well said, Jesse. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Howard, I don't have a city for you. Where are you calling from?
Hollywood, Florida.
Aha, okay, great. What's up?
I think we should consider giving Trump the funding for the wall if he will name it either the Barack Obama wall or the Hillary Clinton wall.
Okay. I love it. Okay, Howard, thank you very much. That's our moment of levity for the day. Jerry in Trenton, New Jersey. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind?
Tom, good to talk to you. I'll make this very brief. Tom, in your commercial, you mentioned the horrible, horrible Nazi rally in the 1930s.
Right, 1939, Madison Square Garden yesterday.
Yeah, that, yep. I'm sure you're aware of, there's a 7-minute documentary on that called The Night in the Garden.
I tweeted it out this morning. Yes.
Okay. In there, it shows the courageous guy jumping on stage and protesting.
Yes.
Now, I watched the documentary, and it looks like those antediluvian thugs, the brown shirt idiots, beat up the guy. Now, I know the footage is choppy, but my take on it was that the New York City cops actually rescued that guy. I mean,
that's what it looked like, although they may well have been beaten on him, too. Who knows?
My only point is, look, I love your show. Your commentary almost makes it seem as though the cops participated in that, and my take on it was that it was actually, if it hadn't been for them, I don't think he'd have made it out of there alive.
Yeah, that may well be the case. And if I was, I don't think, certainly the intent of my comment was not to say that the police were there, right? But actually, though, if you look at the very beginning, if you go to nightatthegarden.com, I think is the website, and you look at the first minute of that, you will see the police outside the theater where there were anti-Nazi protesters beating up the anti-Nazi protesters.
Agreed. You're 1,000% right. I'm just reviewing, and again, I might be quibbling over a very, very minor point.
Yeah.
But look, I love your show, love your commentary, will support you 1,000,000%. I just wanted to bring that small point out.
And Jerry, let's both of us encourage everybody. And you can find I tweeted it out this morning. I'm pretty sure it's nightatthegarden.com. If it's not, you can easily Google it or DuckDuckGo it and find it. It's a 7-minute documentary. It won all kinds of awards. And it is about a Nazi rally of over 20,000 Americans in Madison Square Garden in New York City on this day, or actually on yesterday in 1939.
You're absolutely right.
Jerry,
every time something like that happens, it's like lancing a boil and letting all the poison out.
Yeah, amen. Jerry, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to call you. I've enjoyed your show, as I always do. But I wanted to remind you that the kidnapping and separation of children from their parents forcibly is something that people of my ilk are very familiar with. And it took place long before this current crisis.
Oh, you're right. So when I said this is the first time our government has done this, that was just like totally wrong, because that was just a normal part of slavery. And I use normal in quotes.
Not only that, Mr. Hartman, it continues to this day. Would you argue with me that 12-year-old Tamir Rice was not forcibly taken away from his parents?
That's a good point.
In any event, I just wanted to mention that. And you did have a caller that mentioned Jesse Smollett. I can only say about that, Tom, that we live in alternative realities, those of us who are black and those of us who are not in this country. And the Jesse Smollett case, Donald Trump may call it fake news, but there are lots of angles to that. I'm not ready to automatically accept the fact that this was some ruse perpetrated by him. Maybe, and as a black person, you see, these are the things we think about. Maybe the police, and maybe he was really attacked, and the police were involved in this ruse in Chicago. Maybe they set him up. Maybe he is a Trump stooge, with Trump in the Oval Office. I forget his name, West or something. That guy. Maybe it was that type of thing.
But Kanye West, yeah.
It's Black History. It's Black History Month, and I simply wanted to say to you that this morning I had a great conversation with a guy that you know very well, Rob Call.
Mm-hmm.
He said wonderful things about you, and so did I. So you should be feeling warm and fuzzy.
Oh, that's great. Rob has been one of my best friends for decades.
He said that. I've done a piece that's going to be published by Op-Ed News, so I'm going to give myself a shameless plug here, not because I seek fame or fortune. I want to try to change the world as best I can by touching minds. And I've written a piece called What African American Means to Me. It'll be published in Op-Ed News tomorrow. I will email you a copy of it, and I think that it will be very enlightening to those who choose to seek enlightenment.
Great. I look forward to it. And Op-Ed News is a great, great site. Rob Call's the guy who owns and runs the site, and it's one of the few sites where somebody who is just starting out essentially as an editorialist or as a reporter can get their stuff published and in front of a large audience. So I wish you the very best with that, Kenyatta. It's a great place to start. Thanks for the call, and thanks for reminding me that child separation, particularly among people of color, is nothing new. That this is merely a new iteration of it that's coming along with this administration. Thanks, Kenyatta.
Love you, Tom.
Yeah, thanks. Good back at you, Kenyatta. Good talking to you. Rob in Mesa, Arizona. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I like the argument you had earlier with the person, but I just kind of wanted to reframe it a little bit and just say that, you know, there's only two, in my view, two reasons why people want to come to this country. One is for asylum, and one is for better economic reasons. And regardless of the reason of coming to this country, a wall is not the solution.
Right.
So if they're going to end run, you know, the legal means to get in here, then basically you have to look at, okay, what's allowing them to stay? And you mentioned this many a time with the, you know, the illegal hiring, and right. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
And so if you're just, you know, people aren't coming to the country, they're basically coming for two reasons, and we need a court system to pick them out. Now, your other caller had mentioned about the trafficking. I believe that's a big issue, and I think if you dig deeper in that, that could be a reason why they're not hiring more judges. There's a lot of people probably making a lot of money housing people right now.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, millions of dollars. I mean, you know, $800 a day to keep, you know, a kid in a cage along with four or five
right.
other kids.
So it's ironic that, you know, they're worried about taxpayer money. Instead of just changing the laws to let people work here legally, they don't have to become citizens. Just give them work visas. They'd be paying taxes. We'd be making money off of them. Instead, it's costing us, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, and not only that, the people are exploited, are exploitable, you know, and very often exploited. I mean, the people without documentation who were working for Donald Trump at Bedminster at his golf course were afraid that if they went public, if they contradicted Trump, if they spoke back, if they didn't behave, yes sir, yes sir, yes sir, that not only would they lose their jobs, but they could be turned over to ICE. I mean, there's a legitimate fear there that makes people the victims of exploitation.
Right.
Even if it doesn't nakedly happen, the fear causes them to behave as if it could. Rob, I got to run, but thank you for the call. It's excellent points all. We're going to check in with Talk Media News in just a moment. Bob Ney will be with us, so stick around. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Speaking the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with Bob Ney in just a few minutes. And welcome back, Lafayette. I don't have a city for you, Lafayette, but I see that you're calling, watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Well, Nuremberg ICE. While we speak, Tom, state-sponsored child molesting is going on in these for-profit prisons, and under the Fifth Amendment, we the people have the right to form courts of militia to arrest anyone involved in the satanic conspiracy without indictment.
Where do you find that in the Fifth Amendment, Lafayette?
In the first, no one can be held without indictment except under conditions under military or militia.
Right.
And thanks to the NRA, we're all militia now. We can all be shot.
Well, back when this was written, the militia that they were talking about were the slave patrols in the South.
All right, but under the Tenth Amendment, all the powers of the government have to be specified specifically, whereas under the Ninth, our rights do not have to even be enumerated.
It also says, you know, or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. So maybe that,
we're not in times of public danger right now with a traitor in chief.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, there are state laws that enable citizens' arrests, and they vary from state to state. I don't see it in the Constitution. I get it that you do, and maybe you're right.
It's not denied in the Constitution.
No, it's not. But I think that if you were to, walk up to a public official, to a, Trump administration official and say, I'm going to perform a citizen's arrest based on federal law of the Constitution, you would probably be the one who ends up in jail. Lafayette, thanks for the call. Good idea. I mean, you know, we're all grasping at straws here some days. Denver in Irvington, Kentucky. Hey, Denver, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
I was just, I haven't heard anybody say anything about it. This guy wants to build a stupid wall, which we don't need. But yet we got a statue on the other side of the country telling him, bring your hungry and bring your poor.
Right. So
what you want to do, tear down the Statue of Liberty next time after this is done? It doesn't make any sense.
I think that the Statue of Liberty, were it animate, would have tears running down her face.
Exactly.
She is Columbia. I mean, you know, it's the founders. It's a fascinating story. It was mostly Ben Franklin's idea, apparently. But Jefferson and Madison appear to have had something to do with it. They were looking at Greek and Roman democracies and republics, and they said they all have gods and goddesses. And, you know, we've got plenty of, you know, gods and Jesus and stuff, but where are our goddesses? And so they literally invented a goddess out of thin air, named her Columbia after Columbus, you know, the discoverer of the continent, and put her on the top of the Capitol building, put her on our coins. She was on our coins right up until Ronald Reagan took her off. She's in front of, or in the symbols of, every single federal agency. John Ashcroft famously covered up her naked breast, the one at the Justice Department where she's holding the scales and she's blindfolded and she's got one breast showing. She is the goddess of our country, and they named the District of Columbia after her. It's the District of the Goddess. No building in the city of Washington, D.C. can be built taller than the top of her head on the Capitol building, which is why there's no skyscrapers there. And most people have no idea. It's just amazing stuff. So, yeah, I think that, and when the French sent us a statue, they sent us a statue of Columbia. They said, here, you know, here is your goddess, and she's in New York Harbor, and I think that, you know, if there's not tears in her eyes, somebody should paint them there. Denver, thank you for the call. Well, and the Emma Lazarus poem that goes along with it. We'll be back with Bob Nay. Stick around. And find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. And Loving What You Do, the new book by Ellen Ratner. On the line with us is the author of Sideswiped, former Congressman Bob Nay. Bob, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Tom.
So what's at the top of the hit parade for you? What do you see in the news today that you think is of great consequence?
Well, talking about money, now not just the $5.9 million that Bernie Sanders has raised, but the Fortune 500 companies, the big, big money. I don't know if anybody's called in on that with the regulatory reports.
No.
If you've had anything. Okay, the Fortune 500 companies have begun to file their annual regulatory reports, and the pattern is emerging if you look at them yesterday when in the reports that are filed, and it's just a cursory report, but, you know, it can be dug into numbers-wise. So after the tax cut, which was last year, there's an outsized number led by the giants of Amazon, GM, and Halliburton, who will owe zero or very little in 2018 U.S. income taxes, or actually do a refund. And the reason I raise this, if people look at the report, this is always debated that X amount of people pay X amount of taxes. But if you look at what the statistics say here and what the reports say, here are the numbers. General Motors is claiming a $104 million refund on an $11.8 billion profit in 2018.
Wow.
Goodyear is seeking $15 million in a refund of $693 million in profit. So they'll get, of course, their profit and the refund back. Halliburton will pay $19 million on $1.6 billion in profit. And then let me get to this one because of the debacle, quote, in New York with Amazon, which, you know, of course, AOC, they've put a billboard up against her, you know, et cetera.
Well, the Mercer family's apparently funded that, according to her tweet.
Exactly. Okay, well, here's what it is, because they wanted a breakout there, of course, Amazon. Well, Amazon has its second straight year of owing zero tax. In 2017, Amazon filed for $137 million refund on $5.6 billion in profit. And so, you know, Amazon's added again, then add on top of what else they would get for their headquarters, and they had a good year.
Well, what this shows you is that in 1976, when the Supreme Court said in Buckley versus Vallejo that owning politicians, spending money to support politicians or to support political positions on the part of billionaires, is simply free speech protected by the First Amendment. And then 2 years later in the First National Bank versus Bilotti case, they said, oh, we're extending that free speech human right to corporations as well. So, you know, by the end of 1978, leading right into the Reagan Revolution, the Supreme Court legalized bribery of politicians, ownership, wholly owned politicians, right? And that's what we've got, these politicians. It's so cheap. I'm guessing that most of these companies probably spent $10, $20, $30, $50 million at the most buying politicians to get laws written that would give them hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in tax-free profits or tax refunds. I mean, you're a former member of Congress. Isn't that how it works?
Well, sure, and here's the deviousness of it. You don't hear high profile of spending because they actually aren't having to spend that much to achieve what they want. So it's not like it shows up that they spent, you know, $150 million, et cetera, or one company spent $10 or $15 million. They combine resources, they combine power, and then they get what they want without actually having a high profile because, yeah. You know, what we hear, well, the tax cut benefits the working people of America.
Yeah, which we know is BS. So, but my understanding is that that these days you can buy legislation with as little as a $30,000 campaign contribution to a member of Congress. Is that right?
Well, I mean, you know, there's different cases of political push and power, and I will tell you this, too. It comes at the leadership levels is even worse, because I had been part of meetings where if you went against somebody, they would stand up and say, let me tell you what's contributed to our caucus. So
wow.
If they give a member $15,000 or $20,000, but if they give the leadership team $150,000, then the leadership team breathes down your neck.
Yeah, and as you know, Ryan Zinke, I mean, you know, when he was his hearings to go into Interior, when he was in Congress, he said, if you don't donate at least $10,000, I'm not going to talk to you.
Right,
as I recall.
Yeah, it's buying access into
yeah,
the system.
Yeah, it really is. What else is up, Bob?
Well, the Mueller report, but also I wanted to mention, because, you know, I know you'll be talking about it, but there's a person of interest, which is kind of fascinating. I have not heard this name before, and his name is David Giovannis, and he is tied to one of the oligarchs, Oleg Deripaska, and I'm sorry, my Russian is not that good, but he's tied to the oligarch, and he goes back to 1990, and particularly 1996, on a trip to Moscow for the Trump Corporation, for the Trump Tower. And the Senate, it's becoming known now, they are pursuing this man. It doesn't say where he's at. I'm assuming he's Moscow-based. I'm assuming he's over there, but they want to talk to him. So I don't know if his name surfaced through the Mueller report or something, but, Tom, this is a name I have not heard of before. And,
yeah.
Again, it's David Giovannis and the Senate Intel Committee, Senate investigators, I should say, are looking to find him, and they want to talk to him.
So the Senate Intel Committee is run by the Republicans. Are they actually starting to get serious about this?
Well, it's gotten leaked out that they're looking for him, so I think it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and Deripaska seems to be at the center of so much of this stuff. I'm looking forward to learning more about it. Bob, thank you so much for the call or for the news today. I appreciate it. TalkMediaNews.com. Thanks, Bob. We'll be back. Dr. Douglas Rushkoff is going to be with us. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Stick around. It's going to be fascinating.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.